Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Good morning to Rolene Marks, our Israel correspondent. Rolene, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, good morning. I am good, and yourself?
Very, very well, thank you. A strange week for news in Israel. It's actually been relatively quiet, hasn't it?
And you know I worry about that, Howard. I worry when there's no big stories, because it means that it's the calm before the storm. And I keep thinking, hopefully we'll have a good storm, you know, one of those rainfalls that you need, and that we're not going to see some major incident happening. But, yeah, I do get nervous when there's not a steady stream of major newsworthy stories.
Well, one of the stories that did come up this week was the ruling about allowing a Jew to pray quietly on the Temple Mount. I mean, as absurd as that is, that's an important decision, isn't it?
Well, it is, because the Temple Mount, which was the site of the first two holy Jewish temples and are regarded as the holiest site in Judaism, is now the site for the Al-Aqsa Mosque as well as the Dome of the Rock. And it's seen as a flashpoint in the Middle East, a tinderbox, so to speak, where things can get out of hand very, very quickly, as they have in the past. So earlier this week, a Jerusalem magistrate's court ruled in favor of a Jewish man, a rabbi, who prayed quietly on the Temple Mount. Now, prayers by other religions, other religious symbols, are considered insensitive to the site, which is considered very, very holy to Muslims. It is maintained by the Waqf, which is an institute that tries to maintain, you know, peace, the status quo on the Temple Mount. But what the rabbi in question would do is he would go onto the Temple Mount on a daily basis and very quietly, not drawing attention to himself, pray very, very quietly to himself. Now, police, of course, knowing that this is a very, very sensitive issue, banned him for 15 days, saying that, you know, it's, you know, you kind of, it's very provocative what you are doing. So he took this to the courts. And the judge ruled that, you know, he's not contravening anything criminal. He's doing it quietly. He's not drawing attention to himself. But of course, now that it has made news, we have heard from Hamas, who have said that, you know, this is a declaration of war, but, you know, Hamas don't need much to declare a declaration of war. How would you know? They could say you're wearing the wrong shoes. That's a declaration of war.
A day of rage. A day of rage, you mean?
A day of rage, a day of umbrage, a day of ferrible, you know. We're used to it from Hamas. But we have heard from the Jordanians also expressing their dissatisfaction that this was allowed. But, you know, it of course begs a debate. Is a man praying very quietly, not harming anybody, you know, whose rights are being violated here?
It's such an interesting and such an absurd situation that a Jew in a country, in a Jewish country, needs to get court approval lest he be charged criminally for praying quietly on one of the holiest sites, or the holiest site in the Jewish world.
It really is absurd. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, in this time where we are seeing conciliation between Jews and Arabs in the region, you know, there's of course rumors that we could possibly see normalization happening with Oman pretty soon and other states. Is this really needed? Because it's really only these specific parties that seem to take umbrage at this kind of action. You don't hear it from much of the Arab world.
Hmm. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 0618951019. And I'd love a nuanced answer, because it isn't that simple. We know that. We know that whether it is real or whether it's manufactured, the Temple Mount is a, has been over and over again a cause for bloodshed. And in many ways, if we can avoid bloodshed, isn't that the most important thing to do? Or is it equally as important to allow Jews to pray on the Temple Mount? 34519 or 0618951019. The other subject that I wanted to raise with you, Rolien, is I'm starting to get the feeling from the way in which reports are being put across and the way in which some of the statements that the Americans are making with regard to Iran, that there is definitely a shift in language and a shift in the style of words and intonation that they are using. And they seem to be, in my view, being just a little bit more threatening, aggressive, making it clear to Iran that unless they come back to the table and that they do it ASAP, other options are open. Is my reading of this correct in your view?
Well, I don't think that you're wrong. I think that we have seen the Americans fast running out of patience with the Iranians. We've also heard of a lot more aggression towards the Americans coming from the Iranians as well. I think a real turning point has been the election of the man they call the Butcher of Tehran, Ibrahim Raisi, who is seen as more extreme, if that was even possible, than his two predecessors, Rouhani and Ahmadinejad. And you know, this flagrant disregard by the Iranians for overtures from the Americans, not so much the Europeans. They seem to be still a little bit more conciliatory towards the Europeans. But I think, and I do think that Israel has also played a part here. The Israelis being quite vociferous about the threats that we see coming from Iran, meeting very, very, very regularly with the Secretary of State, with the Secretary of Defense in the United States, making our case, showing what has happened. We can't negate the incidents that have taken place over the last couple of months, especially on the high seas. We had that recent incident where a Romanian and a British national were killed aboard a Israeli-owned merchant ship. We had American backing for resolutions against Iran at the United Nations. So we are seeing a lot more of a firm stance coming from the Americans. And I think really their patience with Iranian reluctance to come to the negotiation table over this nuclear treaty has really, really worn out the American kind of conciliation, and we are now going to see a much more firm stance coming from the Americans.
And no doubt Israel involved in all of those talks as well, I would imagine.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we don't take any threats coming from Iran lightly. They're backing it up with the weapons, the ballistic missiles, the nuclear program. They've made constant threats against the State of Israel in various media, at the United Nations. Even just 2 weeks ago, when our Prime Minister Naftali Bennett addressed the UNGA, he said he's perhaps more harsh recriminations for Iran, speaking about the potential for drone warfare, speaking about the threat they pose not just to the region but to the world as well, and also making public some of the weapons, some of the way they operate that perhaps we haven't seen reported before in the media.
It's 5 years since Perez has died, but a former MK and advisor has accused him of sexual assault. Can you tell us about this, please?
Well, sound quite extraordinary. You know, on the one hand, I don't want to downplay any kind of sexual assault or transgressions committed against anyone. But on the other, why has, and the person in question here, Colette Avital, a former advisor to Perez, to Yitzhak Rabin, but also a former MK, why has she waited so long to make these allegations, especially when he is not here anymore to defend himself, to give his side of the story? She says that, you know, he sexually abused her. It got to the point where she couldn't even look at him. She couldn't have a conversation with him. She didn't want any interaction with him at all. And it comes this week as Israel marks 5 years since the passing of Perez. A very, very iconic figure in Israeli and Jewish history, you know, one of the founding fathers of the modern state of Israel, somebody who's had a complicated political career. He served as prime minister twice. He was seen and brooked a lot of criticism for his support and signing of the Oslo Accords. And then went on to be the president of the country and became probably one of the most beloved and unifying figures of our history, founding the Perez Center for Peace, using his incredible status to bring a lot of attention to speak about Israel, certainly with famed figures around the world. He had a great relationship with Nelson Mandela. He too, an icon of reconciliation. And, you know, one has to wonder, why has she waited 5 years, and specifically in a week where he is honored?
It's very strange, and I'd love your thoughts, please, on 34519 or 0618951019. Given her political strength and the fact that she was able in all these years to address it, should she be precluded from raising this 5 years after his death? 34519 or 0618951019. And I don't think it's a rule that applies to every situation. I do think every situation is different. In this particular case, do you think that she should be allowed to pursue this? Finally, before we've got about a minute and a half, I wanted to just talk to you about this, another Nazi, alleged Nazi god, to be put on trial. This guy is 100 years old. I hope he won't be trying to skip for the court or be on the run or anything like the last one did.
I mean, I have to be honest, when I heard 96-year-old on the run, I thought slowest police chase ever. But yeah, she got into a taxi and did a duck, but she was eventually caught and brought into trial. But yeah, 76 years after the end of World War II, we are seeing a 100-year-old Nazi officer who's on trial for assisting in the murder of nearly 4,000 prisoners at Sachsenhausen. This was a concentration camp near Berlin. He cannot be identified because of privacy laws in Germany. We know him as Joseph S., but he is being brought to trial and is accused of, amongst many things, complicity in the shooting of Soviet prisoners of war and the murder of Jews with Zyklon B gas. Now, of course, it's ignited a debate, you know, is 100 too late to be brought to justice? But I'm of the opinion, and I'd be very interested to hear what the listeners have to say, what about the justice for the victims? And if there is still a possibility of him standing trial, he must be brought to trial. You know, somebody has to answer for the crimes that they committed against over 6 million Jews and countless other minorities who were killed, tortured, and imprisoned by the Nazis.